I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It is the Robin Lindbergh Show coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. Home is so much more than a house. It's the home of your dreams. And for 30 years, they've been making it better. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage, push button, send tweet, later delete account. I don't know if you saw this. Remember Johnny Manziel? Any Anthony, you remember Johnny Manziel?
Johnny Football.
Yeah. You remember him?
I do, vaguely.
Yeah. I mean, he was a big deal there for a while. I don't even particularly like poking fun at this story because I'm concerned for the guy, to be honest. Just not personally. I don't know him, and I don't have any firsthand information. So this is just basically, you know, my informed speculation reading the news stories and all that. But I would say his pattern of behavior has been concerning, as if, you know, he's not perhaps taking care of himself the best way one would. But he was a obviously, like, sensation at college and then a controversial pick in the draft, and then he flamed out in the NFL real fast, in large part, I think, due to his off-the-field decisions. Now, he apparently tweeted last night, at least his account tweeted last night, around 2 o'clock in the morning, mind you, 2 a.m., roughly. Oliver Luck, if you want to boost your ratings to another level, just send me the contract tomorrow and we're in there. Like I said years ago, XFL 2020, give the people what they want. Then shortly thereafter, his entire account was deleted. So I don't know exactly what to read into that situation. You know, again, the timing of the tweet, maybe not the best. The fact that I believe in the past he had been against playing in the XFL. Who cares? You can change your mind.
Yeah, then, just 2 weeks ago he tweeted. He said that he didn't want to be in the XFL because he was worried that it might fold, like the Alliance.
Oh. Well, I mean, you know, you have to address that possibility, right? I mean, in that case, I mean, I get what he's saying, but why would that not still entice him? Because he's looking for another shot at the league. Now, I realize the compensation isn't there, but at this point, he hasn't proven himself to be a professional quarterback. That would be a chance for him to prove himself as a professional quarterback. So if he truly believed in himself, he'd be using the XFL as a springboard to the NFL, and he wouldn't have to worry about the XFL folding. Now, if you just don't want to play football for whatever amount of money that they pay you, I get you. More power to you. Like, that part of it I would get if he's just like, no, I'm not playing football because that's not enough money to play football. Fine. Reasonable. I mean, that's a dangerous thing to do. As some of these XFL guys are making like 50 grand, that's crazy. But... not, you know, and by the way, I hope I don't even really need to qualify this, but, you know, that's not me insulting anybody that's making 50 grand out there. I know a lot of people work hard for their money, but football is a whole different animal in what you're doing and what you're putting out there on the line. And 50 grand is not a reasonable compensation in my mind for playing professional football. Now, we understand why a league like the XFL would pay that way, but if that's why Johnny Manziel didn't want to play, okay, I get that. But if it's because he thinks the league's going to go under, no one was saying he would be a full-time XFL player for the rest of his life. You would think he would hope that would get him back to where he once was. But there are clearly issues going on with Johnny Manziel, or at least that have gone on with Johnny Manziel that go well beyond football. I don't know if this tweet is a part of that, and then the subsequent deleting of an account is a part of it. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. The topic of the XFL is an interesting one, though, because I remember when the AAF launched. I did a show the next day, I believe, and the talk was about the ratings that the AAF got. I think they launched on a Saturday night, and they beat the NBA or tied the NBA. It was very close, but I think they might have slightly beat the NBA head-to-head that night. It was like a Rockets-Thunder game, so it wasn't some random NBA game either. It was James Harden against Russell Westbrook when they were on opposite teams. I'm pretty sure that was the game. And I remember there was a viral clip of one of the AAF players getting hit in that game that was spread everywhere, and people were all excited. They were talking about, like, the next day, like, talking about how spring football is going to work and the AAF, what a great success their launch was. They couldn't pay their players, like, 3 weeks later. And the league was out of business within a year. Now, that wasn't because of TV ratings, even though their TV ratings fell a bunch. I mean, that was because of the infrastructure, and they weren't prepared to run a league of that size, and they rushed to get it out there. But it was a lesson, and I said this at the time. It's not like I'm going back and revising what I said. I said at the time, you know, let's relax. The opening week is all going to be hype and curiosity. So the opening week numbers really mean nothing to me. That's not a prediction of how sustainable something is or even the overall interest. That's a curiosity factor. Now with the XFL has clearly, you know, put more time into their buildup. They waited for their launch. They handled with care some of their rule changes and television offerings and what they would deliver. So I get that they learned the lesson from the AAF, from the XFL the first time around. Like, for sure, right? They're not just going into this blind. And Vince McMahon has a lot of pride. He's not going to let this league fold in a year, even if it's to his own detriment. To keep it going. I doubt he lets the league fold in a year. Nevertheless, the ratings for the second week of the XFL were significantly lower than the first week. Now, I could have spun it positively for them. I think they were like at 3-something million week one and 2-something million week two. So it was only like a third of the audience dropped off. I would have spun that positively if I were them and said, hey, you know, we were up against the NBA All-Star stuff this time around. We were up against the NASCAR race. And I'm not a NASCAR guy. I don't know anything about NASCAR. But I bet you there's some overlap in the audience of people who would watch NASCAR and people who would watch the XFL. So they could have spun it that way, you know. There was plenty of ways to spin that. But if the numbers continue to go down, that's when they're getting in some trouble. And I wonder, you know, have you heard any talk about the XFL since week one? Right? Like, that's the way it works. Week one, it was the talk. And it was a question. It was a conversation driver on a show like this. Are you into it? And clearly enough, people think that spring football is a good idea for so many leagues to try it. But at the same time, none of them have been successful. And one thing's for sure, based on history, the first week is not an indicator or of the success or failure of a league. And the XFL is already showing some parallels with that. Now, they don't need to have the audience they had in the first week. But they need to hold some of the audience they have now. You know, week two into week three can't be the same as week one into week two. And week three into week four can't be the same as week one into week two. If that fall off continues to happen, they're in real jeopardy of losing all their TV partners. If they can, you know, if week two can, let's say week one into week two fell off 30-something percent, 33%. If week two into week three can only fall off 10%, and then they can hold that audience, that week three audience, you know, for the rest of the year, they're okay. They'll be all right. But you have to be a little concerned that it's just going to continue to go down. And if you know, talk is any indication, the interest is almost already gone. You know, I can't, maybe there's people that are watching and not saying anything about it, but it was a lot of talk going into that launch post Super Bowl and everything, and I haven't heard much about the XFL since. 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227. Anthony, what do you think?
You know, the spring football, I wonder, do people really want it? I know they keep on trying because, I mean, the XFL is, you know, is king. And
the NFL, yeah.
Yeah, the NFL is king. So, I mean, I get what they're trying to do, but clearly the product isn't as good. So I think that clearly is an issue. But I just, like, for me personally, I don't need football year-round. Like, I actually do enjoy the break. I enjoy not having the NFL because then when it does finally come around again, I'm excited for it. So I actually don't mind the break, and plus I am interested in other sports as well, so, I mean, that also helps. But I don't, for me personally, I don't need football year-round.
I think that's also part of the appeal of the NFL is it's a finite product, right? Like, You only get, I mean, they're going to try and expand it, obviously, to 17 games now, but you only get a handful of games. Those games mean more. They're only played on a certain days of the week, you know, during a certain time of the year. It's football season, right? Season, not, you know, it's football. That's part of the whole broad appeal. So, yeah, I think there are a lot of people who are like that. Now they're moving on to the different part of the calendar year. Maybe there is enough audience out there that just casually wants to watch football all the time, but it hasn't been proven to be a successful business model as of yet. The XFL is going to try, but so far, Bailey Carlin, who runs their social media, I know him, he's doing a heck of a job. And they're getting a lot of attention on social media, but as far as like traditional media, you know, is it going to be something that sticks at all? And that's the question I asked after week one, because it was the same question I asked after the AAF week one. Are we going to be talking about this in 2 weeks?
Yeah, the ratings, it was a massive dip in the ratings. And also the ratings for week two of the XFL, much better than the week two ratings for the AAF.
So hopefully that's a promising side for the fledgling football league. 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227. Get back to baseball coming up next and what could still be done about the Astros. It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show.
The Houston Astros sign-stealing scandal has been a gift for sports talk hosts in February, but can't be a great thing for the Houston Astros nor for baseball. And to continue the discussion, I'm joined by David Sampson, CBS Sports HQ MLB analyst and host of the Nothing Personal podcast. And David, before we get more into the possible fallout going into this season, I wanted to get your thoughts on what David Ortiz said, labeling Mike Fiers a snitch. Like, now, I get the idea that he didn't love that Fiers didn't say anything until after the fact, but I think the use of the word snitch is going to rub a lot of people the wrong way.
Yeah, I'm not sure that he actually said he was a snitch. It was a snitch-like thing to do. The problem with David Ortiz, from my standpoint, is that he's trying to communicate to the public the type of old-school clubhouse that exists and really, to this day, still exists, where what goes on in the clubhouse stays in the clubhouse. But with something like this, there really is such a big difference. It's personal things that stay in the clubhouse, right? When certain words that are spoken or actions that are taken or things that you see or do, those things stay in the clubhouse. But something like this, we have to be very careful how we label Mike Fiers, because it's very good that this information came out, and it's okay that it came from him. Ideally, Robin, he would have said something earlier, but not everybody's comfortable until it's their time.
Now, you know, I think that baseball and maybe the Astros thought this was all going to blow over, and the way that they handled it from a PR standpoint probably assured that it didn't. One, the Astros came out and apologized, which I never bought. I mean, there's no way you're going to be sorry for something that you coordinated and conducted over that period of time, right? And then second, it almost felt to me like Rob Manfred didn't show that he was wrestling with this. It's almost like he was annoyed to be answering some of the questions. Do you think there is anything else to come? Or are we just going to get back to the start of the regular season and it's going to be business as usual?
Well, no, I think this story will last throughout the season. I think that you're going to, every time the Astros play, you're going to hear people banging on trash cans. You're going to hear people booing. You know, we've created now an enemy, a heel, if you will, in Major League Baseball. It used to be the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Dodgers. Now we've added the Astros, and there's such a level of emotion. I argued on Nothing Personal yesterday that it's possible at the end of the day this will be good for baseball. Just imagine, Robin, that it's the Astros-Yankees in the LCS come October. Who's not going to watch that?
Well, you know, what about the idea of the retaliation, though, on the field? Because this is where I think he's in a little bit of this is a tough situation, because I know that's been something that's been done in baseball, and I've been against it in the past, so I'm not going to be hypocritical here. But clearly, a lot of players feel that they weren't punished enough, so they're going to try and dole it out. And then Manfred is going to, you know, try and punish them for that. And then maybe some people will continue to do it in spite of Manfred. Do you think the commissioner has lost control of the sport?
No, I definitely don't. But I want to talk about the retaliation, because it's a different game now. So I ran a team for 18 seasons, and there were times when I was in favor and a part of retaliation and making sure that we were hitting certain players at certain parts of the game. But the game has changed so much now with launch angle and home runs, that what we tell our guys, and my last year we told our guys, hey, listen, we'll give up solo home runs all day, but we cannot have runners on base. It's not worth it anymore to hit a guy and risk giving up now a two-run or a three-run or a grand slam home run. It's just not worth it. Now, you'll argue that there's certain times when you have an eight-run lead, there's no one on base, just do it and hit them. But I just don't see that as happening as much as people say. There's a market of 83.5 for hit by pitch for the Astros. I'm taking the under.
Robin Lundberg talking to David Sampson, CBS Sports HQ MLB analyst, host of the Nothing Personal podcast. Of course, he referenced his time in baseball down with the Marlins. Now, David, when you said you don't think Rob Manfred has lost control of the sport, how would you assess how he's handled this?
It's not easy to sit in front of the media. I'm glad that he apologized for what he said about the Commissioner's Trophy, the World Series trophy. It's one of my favorite possessions and one of the greatest things that I've been a part of, certainly on the field, off the field. But I think that as commissioner, he's a businessman. He's in charge of a game that has $11 billion of revenue. He's in charge and has 30 owners he answers to and has to deal with. And it's a tough position. And this was something that certainly got away from him from a PR standpoint, and he knows it. And Jim Crane really was not helpful in this. This would have really been a different narrative if their press conference to start spring training had not been such an abject disaster. I think that is what gave this story even more legs.
No, I agree. I mean, I think he had doled out the punishment, and I think it was the tag team combination of what the Astros did and then Manfred coming out and making the piece of metal comment along with a few other comments. So do you think there will be any further action taken, or is he simply going to continue to hope to ride out with the initial punishment?
Well, no, there's not going to be that. That's the punishment.
Yeah.
The Astros are done being punished for what they did in 17. If new evidence comes to light that requires something to get reopened, they could again look at something from the front office and ownership standpoint. But the players are not going to be punished. They were all granted immunity. We have gone over this time and time again. When you get immunity, that's it. It doesn't get taken away from you no matter what else comes to light. But now the Red Sox have to be dealt with. And I think that it's important for baseball, maybe next week, not this week, but the week after, they've got to let the investigation be done. And the reason they're taking so much time is they want to be able to say, and this is what I'm waiting for and looking for, they want to be able to say, hey, we've looked at every team. We've looked at every allegation. We are punishing the Red Sox in the following way, and there is no other example of a team or a player who are in violation of our technology policy, and then hard stop. That's what I think you're going to see, and that's why I think baseball is taking so long. to get the Red Sox report out.
Yeah, I mean, I got to be interested in the other shoe that's going to drop with the Red Sox. Now, maybe it's less than the Astros. Is there any, trepidation on baseball's side of what actually gets out there with Boston? I mean, I think you want to be transparent, obviously, but considering the way this has gone from a public reaction standpoint, you think there's any concern about what they might actually have on the Red Sox and putting it out there?
There's no concern on what they have and putting it out there. They're going to go public with that. The concern that you always have when you run a company is that you can only deliver to the public or deliver to your employees that which you learn through an investigation. And Rob said this, and it may have not resonated with many, but you can only investigate and you can only punish what you're told. And you can only get people to talk when you either A, promise them immunity, or you have a turncoat or someone who has an agenda, whatever the reason may be. So it's not as easy as you think to uncover this sort of wrongdoing that goes on within the game. So I think the biggest worry that baseball will have is that once the Red Sox investigation is done and the book is closed, a month later, there's another article or another source or another player who says, by the way, no one's talking about blank. And that's the problem.
David, really appreciate your insight on this topic, man. Thank you.
Hey, have a great day. Good morning. Thank you.
You're listening to The Robin Lundberg Show.
It is The Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio, and you can call the CBS Sports Radio toll-free line, 855-212-4227, sponsored by GEICO. Whether you own or rent, GEICO makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work, so get a quote at geico.com. Easy. Let's go to Chad in Texas. Chad, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Yeah, Rob, I just think that the reason David Ortiz comes out so hard on Mike Pierce is about being a snitch is when, you know, David Ortiz first played with Minnesota, he was a mediocre player. And then he got a free agent, and then the PED stuff started, and he became a great player. And then a couple years ago, Jack Clark with St. Louis Radio come out and said that he believed that he'd done PEDs, and that's what the deal is. That's why he's so harsh on being a snitch. Another thing is, does Mike Fears come out and say anything if he gets re-signed?
I mean, look, I don't know, and I'm not like that into the inner workings of that aspect of it, to be honest with you. I mean, I like talking about it today because of the word snitch, but bottom line is the information got out there. And I think we're all glad the information got out there, right? Are there people that are upset the information got out there? So, relitigating how it got out there is kind of silly, and all that. It is interesting to see how various players react, right? Like the ones who are really angry and hurt by this versus the ones who are saying, hey, you shouldn't have told. That is interesting to me and maybe insightful in a sense. But overall, you know. It kind of is what it is. Tonight at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific on CBS Sports Network, fourth-ranked San Diego State looks to extend their undefeated record when they welcome UNLV. That's only on CBS Sports Network. You know what else is tonight? Wilder Fury. And I said before the break that when baseball was America's pastime, there was a sport that was on top that isn't any longer. And of course, I was referring to boxing. You know, there was a day that boxing and horse racing were king. You know, it's amazing, right? Yeah, that's why I always try to use examples like that when people make an argument that something won't change or that, like, hey, this is how it is. You know, it used to be that it was boxing and horse racing. It used to be a smoke on airplanes. You know, what would you do if somebody lit up a cigarette next to you on the airplane right now? Like, what would your look on your face be? You'd be, impossibly, confused, maybe angered. I don't know. It would not be a normal look, right? But that was a commonplace thing. You know, people smoking. When I was in New York, when I first moved to New York, you'd be smoking in bars still. Now you got to, you know, walk around the block to smoke. So that stuff is, constantly evolving and changing. Now, boxing is an interesting one, though. Because boxing, people act like it's not popular. Boxing's still very popular. It's popular. It's just really big niche popular, not mainstream popular. I might be the only person who ever compares boxing to golf, but I actually think golf and boxing have some similarities in that golf is very popular with certain crowds, right? And those crowds happen to be suits a lot of times. So you see golf get a lot of love on networks and stuff because the people who are programming those networks play golf, and that's the circles they run in, so they're talking about golf. So they probably overstate golf's popularity. Not that golf isn't popular. Golf has a devoted following. Golf has a lot of dollars in it. You know, advertisers like golf because the consumers spend a lot of money. But unless Tiger Woods is involved, golf is a niche sport, right? Or a niche activity. When Tiger Woods is involved and when he was in his heyday, it went mainstream. But when he hasn't been involved, it's not really, you know, a big thing. Maybe the Masters, maybe here and there a major, but it's not part of the day-to-day discourse. And boxing's the same way. Except for boxing, the people that, you know, are into boxing generally aren't the suits. It's, you know, people of different demographics in different pockets. You know, if you live in New York, you go uptown, boxing's going to be a big topic of conversation. The Puerto Rican community loves boxing. Obviously, the Mexican community loves boxing. You know, and then you've got old school heads that love boxing and so on and so forth. But boxing's popular enough where, let me put it this way, Canelo Alvarez got $365 million from DAZN. Boxing's popular enough for that to happen. Boxing's popular enough where DAZN, that streaming service, if you haven't heard of it, that's trying to get a foothold in the industry, what was their launch plan? Their launch plan was boxing. Let's get the boxing fans on board. We get the boxing fans on board, we'll go from there. That was their launch plan. There's enough boxing fans. But boxing hasn't been mainstream. And therefore, it's always, you know, talked about as if it doesn't matter or doesn't exist or there's these big problems. Now, boxing does have some problems. I mean, it's the Wild West, the way it's run. It's crooked. You know, there's no they when it comes to boxing, right? Like, there's no, when you talk about baseball, you're talking about MLB. When you talk about football, you're talking about NFL. When you talk about basketball, you're talking about NBA. Even when you're talking about mixed martial arts, you're talking about UFC for the most part, right? Like, you know who's in charge, the sanctioning body, who's making the decisions. Boxing, you don't know. Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury are fighting tonight. Does anybody have any idea what belts they're fighting for? I have no idea. No idea what belt. There could be 20 belts on the line tonight, for all I know. They're heavyweight. It's essentially the heavyweight championship in perception. But I don't know if they're actually fighting for the heavyweight championship belt. I think they are for the WBF heavyweight championship belt or something like that. But nobody freaking knows. Nobody knows who's the number one contender. Nobody knows, you know, how these fights are set up, why certain fights don't happen, because boxing as a sport is broken structurally in that way. It's a bunch of dueling promoters all looking out for their best interest, the best interest of their fighters, the most money, not the best interest of the sport. With that said, I think tonight's fight's a pretty big one. I think it's a pretty big one because in Deontay Wilder, the sport has someone who can be its face, who can be its star. You know, and boxing's been at its best when that's been the case. Not going all the way back to the days of the great Muhammad Ali or anything like that, but let's use the last two, I think, transcendent boxing superstars as an example. Mike Tyson was the first. And Mike Tyson fought in a whole different era than Wilder, the heavyweight to greater, of course. He was going up against Evander Holyfield and Lennox Lewis and other greats. But Mike Tyson clearly captured the imagination, hence Mike Tyson's punch out and the way Mike Tyson is still thought about to this day. And then it was Floyd Mayweather. Now, Floyd Mayweather was different because Floyd wasn't a heavyweight. And Floyd also didn't fight in a flashy style. I mean, that was part of how he raised the ire of fans. Is Floyd was so disciplined in his style, so meticulous in his style, that some would accuse him of running or not really fighting. And then he also got accused of not fighting the best opponents, which, maybe he didn't fight them all in their absolute prime, but if you look at his record and you go back, I mean, Floyd Mayweather beat Canelo Alvarez. He beat Shane Mosley. He beat Miguel Cotto. He beat Oscar De La Hoya. He beat Manny Pacquiao. He beat Conor McGregor even. You know, like that, you can't really say that about Floyd. And Floyd's an interesting character because he is not someone to view very positively outside of the ring. He has not conducted himself in a manner outside of the ring that I think is admirable. But inside the ring, he's the complete antithesis of that. He's so disciplined, and it's weird. It's a paradox, right? Because he's like, he can act undisciplined outside of the ring, but be so disciplined inside the ring. I've never seen anybody as masterful at their craft as Floyd Mayweather was, a tactician. You know, he'd go against some of the best fighters you've ever seen and come out completely unscathed. So he was different in that way, but it certainly helped drive the interest in boxing, or at least his fights and the overall revenue. Since he's been gone, there hasn't been that guy. I mean, the UFC still has it in McGregor now, who's back. But boxing hasn't had it post-Mayweather. Now, boxing has Deontay Wilder. And Deontay Wilder is more in the vein of a traditional heavyweight who could capture people's imagination with the punching power. Because Wilder is not a great boxer, particularly. In fact, Tyson Fury is a better boxer than Deontay Wilder. But Deontay Wilder has a presence. You know, he presents himself in a certain way. The clothes, sunglasses, the entrance music, the masks that he might wear down to the ring, the interviews. He presents himself in a certain way. And then he has one deliverable in the ring, and that's his right hand. His right hand is is the most powerful punch I've seen in the history of the sport. The most devastating weapon. And when you're fighting in the heavyweight division, there aren't really Mayweather. I mean, I guess Tyson Fury, in a sense, is that kind of fighter where he can dodge it and try and get away from it. But in their last fight, he got hit with it. And if it wasn't for a slow count, he was probably knocked out in that fight. Now, admirably, he got himself up off the mat and fought back to fight to a draw. Some people even think he won that fight. But he ate that punch and went down. And that's the problem when you're fighting at heavyweight. You know, you're almost certainly going to get hit. And if Wilder connects just one time, that can be it. And those are they're scary highlights in my mind. I mean, I was at the fight where he fought Dominic Brazil, and he caught him with that, and it sounded like a car door slamming. I was scared for dude's health and well-being immediately after. But it breaks jaws and the internet, if you will, because when Wilder lands one of those punches, it's everywhere. So when you combine his presence with that one deliverable in the ring, that punch, then you have the recipe for a really crossover megastar. The problem is he needs some signature wins. He needs, you know, he can't just do that against tomato cans. That's why I'm saying I think this fight is important. People at least are aware that Tyson Fury is not some scrub. So for boxing, I think Wilder winning the way Wilder wins would be very good for that sport, with the problems it has in its underbelly notwithstanding. 855-212-4227. Are you excited for this fight tonight? 855-212-4227. Let's go to Tony in Chicago. Tony, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, how's it going, buddy?
Going well. How are you?
I'm doing good. You know what? I hear your thing about boxing, about why it went, like, that it went down, and it's not like baseball now. I'll tell you, like, you remember the fight with Canelo Alvarez and Triple G with that judge that scored a 118 to 110 or something like that? I think that's the main reason why boxing is really low, like, in ratings nowadays, because we love boxing, but we can't understand the scoring. We don't understand what's like in baseball. You know who wins. You know, in football, the scoring is easy to, but when you're watching a fight and you see the scoring at the end with the judges, like, that judge got fired or she got put down because she outscored the fight like 118 to 110 when the fight was so close with Triple G and Canelo Alvarez. So I feel like it's just the fact that we can't really understand who's winning. Like, we think we know who's winning by just, like, there's no scoring system that says, okay, this guy won. And it's so complicated with when you see judges that are, like, way off on the score from what you see, like, originally with the eye. Like, you, I'm sure you like boxing, or you love boxing, so you could understand who's winning just by watching the fight. But when you see the scoring at the end of the fight, and you've seen so many fights that are, like, so lopsided with the scoring, and it's, like, it just it's confusing at some time, at some point, you know? Like, there's, like, it just doesn't make sense sometimes with
no,
the scoring.
No, that was my point I was saying before. There's no over, you know, riding body in boxing. There's no one in charge of that. So it's crooked. There's no doubt parts of boxing are crooked. You know, you got promoters out for their own best interest. You could get money being slipped on the side, all that sort of stuff. And there's definitely questions about judging at times, making weight, drug use, all that stuff. And it can't be, you know, the belts, the confusion over who's the champion, why fights aren't being made. You know, why will we talk about a fight for years and years and years and years before it's actually made? All that's because of the lack of leadership in boxing, the lack of one governing body over the sport. You know, because as much as we are upset about the Astros punishment, we know who to talk about. We know who to point a finger at. We know who to discuss. That's Rob Manfred, right? He's the guy. He's the guy that's the figurehead for the owners. He's the commissioner. He's the face, not of baseball, but of baseball management. Boxing doesn't have that. I mean, even like I'll use the UFC as a better parallel because it's also a combat sport. And you know Dana White, right? Like everybody knows Dana White. He's the guy. If you have a problem with the UFC, who are you talking about? Dana White. Boxing is like a whole bunch of different dudes. And that's one of the issues. I don't know if that's the issue, keeping it where it is, but it's certainly one of them. But, you know, star power works regardless. And Deontay Wilder has that star power. He just needs some signature wins. Because you can see him knock out guys you never heard of. And it's not like Tyson Fury is the most famous person alive or anything. But Tyson Fury is a quality fighter that people are aware of now. He's doing WWE guest appearances and the like. And he's skilled. So I think a win in the way he's been winning for Wilder here would be that huge breakout moment. 855-212-4227. Are you excited for the fight tonight? 855-212-4227. Wilder versus Fury. Probably the biggest heavyweight fight in a long time, to be honest with you. I'm trying to think back when the last time a heavyweight fight was this hyped. I can't think of it off the top of my head. Robin Lundberg Show, CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.